And to some extent, it's because technology enables us to do things quite quickly and at scale. So you can reach millions of people potentially with a solution that you might only have reached hundreds of people with in the past. And that's why tech is important to us. It's that newfound ability to use these tools to do things at scale. And the problems that we're addressing are super, super urgent and super important. So we feel like there's almost an ethical imperative to use technology to try and solve these problems, because it's one of those things that's out there that can help us do this at scale.
That was Paul Miller, CEO of Bethnal Green Ventures, one of Europe's leading tech for good early stage investors. Its mission is to support startups that focus on tackling big social and environmental issues that improve people's lives. In this fascinating episode, Paul gives us inside knowledge on what it takes to create a successful tech for good company, exactly what tech for good is, and also how technology can be meaningfully applied to solve urgent real-world issues. But first of all, welcome to Digital Mindfulness, where each week we take you through the latest innovations in responsible and ethical technology transformation, including such topics as digital well-being, tech for good, and many, many more. I hope you enjoy this episode with Paul Miller. Paul, thank you so much for joining me here on Digital Mindfulness. It's a real treat to have you on the show at last. I've been wanting to have you on for a long time now, and I'm really looking forward to our discussion today. So welcome.
Oh, thanks very much. It's great to be here.
So, Paul, introduce yourself, if you would, to the audience. And in particular, tell us how you came to be working in the tech for good / ethical technology space and what led you to Bethnal Green.
So, what's the backstory? Well, I actually started out working in public policy on sort of social and environmental implications of technology. So this was in the early noughties. We just had the dot-com crash. I was looking at, okay, well, what's this newfangled thing called the internet? What's that going to mean for health, for education, for climate change? Found all kinds of interesting things, but it was definitely early days in terms of, you know, people even thinking that there was any impact from technology or any possibilities, really. Yeah, that community grew up through these things called social innovation camps, and there was always this question at the end of those weekends, which basically, well, how do I quit my job and turn this into a startup, a proper startup? And that's where BGV came in. We provide people with that little bit of capital and the support and the networks you might need to go from an idea, a prototype, and a small team of people who are committed to solving a particular problem through to hopefully a really quickly growing social impact startup, a tech for good startup.
Paul, you mentioned there tech for good, and you mentioned social impact startups, but can you just tell us exactly what they mean? Because I think with a lot of people, you know, there are lots of different terms to describe, you know, ethical technology and ethical AI and tech for good, and they're not necessarily the same things.
No. I think there's lots of different phrases being, you know, cast around at the moment. For us, tech for good is using technology to have a positive impact on people's lives. So, that could be in health, it could be in education, could be through addressing climate change. You know, all those things have a benefit to people's lives, and it's using technology to do that. And I think, it's important to state, like, what's the role of technology in doing that? And to some extent, it's because technology enables us to do things quite quickly and at scale. So you can reach millions of people potentially with a solution that you might only have reached hundreds of people with in the past. And that's why tech is important to us. It's that newfound ability to use these tools to do things at scale. And the problems that we're addressing are super, super urgent and super important. So we feel like there's almost an ethical imperative to use technology to try and solve these problems, because it's one of those things that's out there that can help us do this at scale. I think there's other phrases around. So people often talk about, impact tech or impact investment. And that's, I think that's, some of that is similar. Then there's also responsible tech, which I think is that sort of, if tech for good is the what, and to some extent the why, then responsible tech is the how. It's like, how do you go about developing that product, that service, that organization that's going to be the guardian of that technology? That for me, that's about responsible tech. And then there's also kind of ethical tech as well. And that to some extent is about responsible tech, but it's particularly focused on how do you treat your users. So as questions of data, questions of like unintended consequences, all those kinds of things as well. So yeah, there are lots of different terms at the moment, but this is a really rapidly growing and rapidly changing movement. So I don't think it's that surprising that there's lots of different terms being cast around at the moment.
Do you find then that it's helpful at the moment? I mean, because like you're saying, we're kind of in the middle of a maelstrom at the minute of different, just different terminology, lots of different startups and companies emerging across lots of different industry verticals. Do you think that, I guess, that lack of clarity on what these terms actually are, or the fact that they bleed over into each other, does that help or hinder your mission?
It's pretty helpful to us that there's loads of stuff going on. I'll say that in terms of, we love the fact that there's so many more people committed to doing this. And, different people have their own definitions of different things, and that's fine. I don't think we should fall out over those kind of things. It's more about like, what are we trying to achieve in the long run? And we're trying to solve some really important problems in the world using tech. And the more people that can help with that, the better. I think one thing that is important probably is there's a difference between doing this sort of intentionally or accidentally. there are a whole bunch of people who are sort of saying, who are doing something and they've now badged it tech for good or impact tech because they sort of potentially think that's a way to raise money or to sort of gain a bit more trust in the market. But it wasn't their intention when they set that thing up to do this. They've sort of added it on afterwards. Whereas for us, it's really important that we're backing founders and that we're working with investors where like that intention to have a positive impact has always been there and is at the heart of their business model and of their culture and so on. So there is a difference between people who are potentially sort of saying, oh yeah, we're impact, we're tech for good, but actually it's just an add-on to what they've been doing already, and people where it is truly at the heart of it.
Paul, one of the questions I was going to ask you was why, in particular, the tech for good space. If you are going to start a business, why would you go into this particular space? But hearing you talk about the potential for technology to impact people's lives for these critically important questions, I'm thinking that this would be the reason why you chose to establish Bethnal Green Ventures.
Yeah, and I think it's for us, it's not an or, it's an and. We're looking for things where it's both, where there's a really brilliant business to be built because there is an opportunity there, but that is done through having a positive impact on the world. So this idea that the more of the product or service that you sell, the more positive impact you have on the world, that's what we're looking for. And I guess that is the biggest sort of thing we want to prove, if you like, with Bethnal Green Ventures, is to prove that is possible. And so far the signs are pretty good, I'd say.
So, Paul, tell us a little bit about some of the companies that have been through BGV and what they've been working on and how they've impacted society.
Sure. So, let's take a health startup to start off with. So there's a company called OurPath that we backed a couple of years ago. And what they're trying to do is essentially reverse diabetes. So they've built a behavior change program that if somebody is diagnosed with pre-diabetes, helps them avoid getting type 2 diabetes. And all the signs so far are that just in terms of, it's very successful in terms of stopping people from going on to develop type 2 diabetes. And they've managed to really great, they're now offered as part of an NHS program, so they're being offered to patients that way, They're also being offered through employers. So employers are sort of offering this as a benefit to some of their employees because they see the benefit of obviously having a healthier workforce. You know, that's one where actually, you know, some pretty mainstream venture capitalists behind our path who've come in, you know, after us. And that's, again, I think as they see the real business opportunity around this, because again, the more of the product or service that they sell, the more people they're going to help, the more money they're actually going to save for the NHS through this. So that's one example in health. In sort of sustainability, a company called Let Us Grow, which is a vertical farming startup, and they've developed a technology that basically helps to do what's called aeroponic farming, which is creating a mist that that feeds and waters plants through their roots. And it turns out that this technology is much more efficient in terms of it creates real water savings and energy savings for growing crops indoors, which I think is something that, you know, we're almost inevitably going to have to do in the future, because, you know, it's the transport costs and the getting things close to market and so on. So, you know, that's completely different kinds of startups. You know, something from something that's trying to tackle diabetes to something that's trying to tackle climate change through the way that we produce our food. So it's a pretty wide range.
This is all great, Paul. So if you are an entrepreneur and you have an idea or a semi-formed idea, what would be the process of going through BGV to get funding or get onto the program?
Yeah, so we're actually doing interviews for our next program at the moment. That's going on this week. So we usually interview about 40 teams, and we choose, roughly speaking, the top 10 that we want to invest in. And about a month after that, they come in. We invest a bit of money so as they can like live whilst they're doing it. And that's really what that first investment is about. It's about helping people to focus on it full time and really not have to worry about like going into debt to start a startup, because I think it's really important that like anybody is able to do this, not just people who've got the sort of personal wealth to be able to do that. They come and join us. They'll all be sat together in our space. So you've got 10 new ventures all helping each other and sort of getting to know each other. That's a really nice vibe. And then we work in a series of sprints, 2-week sprints, where we will take a topic. So the first one is called Designing with People in Mind. And it's about like how do you go about a sort of ethical and really user-centered approach to user research and developing the products, requirements, and so on. And then at the end of that sprint, we'll get everybody together. They'll present what they've learned to the rest of their cohort and to some of our mentors, get feedback, and hopefully try and improve it. And we do that 6 times with different topics over the course of our 3-month program. And hopefully by the end of it, then that venture has just got so much more sophisticated and sort of, well, both sophisticated, and they've probably got simpler as well in the way that they explain and have designed what their product or service is. And then we have a demo day at the end where they show all of that to our community. We're alongside that, obviously, we're helping them to meet other investors and to sort of, you know, put the pieces in place for what comes after that 12 weeks.
So how many companies then have been through this whole process?
Because so we've invested in 120 companies now. So about 65 of those are still active. There's, you know, there's quite a lot of these that don't work out, and that's fine. You know, we've learned from that, and certainly the financial loss that we make on those ones that don't work out is more than offset by the ones where it does work out. So that's also fine. But yeah, that alumni community is very important. It's very useful. And also people who join those companies later on, I think, even if they join the company after that we invested, they still get something out of it. We quite often find that, you know, there's new employees of some of our later stage companies get involved in BGV because it is just such a nice and useful community.
So, Paul, the program that you've created and, you know, including this series of sprints and all, the whole process that the companies go through, is that something that you've developed yourself in-house or you've had to bring in from outside?
Yeah, it's evolved over time. We started this in the summer 2012. So we're 7 years in now. I think we've run 14 odd programs like this. And there's some things that are just the same as when we started out, but some things that have definitely changed a lot. I think it's interesting to look back and think, okay, yeah, when we started out, I don't think anybody had heard of like Lean Startup. Do you know what I mean? And like now, yeah, almost everybody who's coming into a startup program, you sort of say, if you were to start off with, right, we're going to just introduce this thing called the Lean Startup, they'll go, yeah, we know that. You know, so like the sort of basic knowledge of like how to do customer development and stuff has definitely improved over time. So we've certainly adapted the way that we present material and how we help people to learn about the sort of startup craft over time. But some things like the way we do peer support and the fact that we bring in experienced founders and get them to talk off the record about what went wrong and what went right, all those kind of things are still the same. But I think the content has moved on over the years.
Yeah. And I guess then not only do you have to stay ahead of, say, technology trends and the startup scene, but you also have to keep up with the research in terms of how to get the best out of them.
Definitely. And that's another thing, is there's just so much more of it now. So when we started in 2012, there were very few really early stage investors in the UK. You know, you had later stage venture capitalists and some angel investors, but now there's loads of programs for early stage startups, and that's great. I think that's absolutely brilliant development, but it does mean that we've got to be sort of keeping up with what everybody else is doing, because if it is to some extent a competitive environment. We're trying to have an offer that's for the very best tech for good startups, and there's other places they can go now, so we've got to keep on top of all of that.
Absolutely. So, Paul, I'm wondering, through your research that you would have conducted, are you seeing that the market for tech for good products is increasing, both by consumers and also by businesses?
Yeah, absolutely. It only seems to be going one way, which is there's more demand from consumers. There's more demand in terms of people who want to start these kind of companies. There's more demand from people who want to work for these kind of companies. There's more demand from people who want to invest in these kind of companies. So you've got this like layer upon layer of people wanting to see this happen for different reasons. And I think we're lucky at BGV that we sit in the middle of all of that. So we as long as we can be helpful to all the different kinds of organization and individual who want to be part of that, then we're in a good spot. I think the other one is actually bigger companies like wanting to be connected to this world. So whether that's Facebook now running, they ran a sort of deep tech for good program last year, and Microsoft have run an AI for good program. So the really large companies also like want a piece of this as well. And I think you might start to see actually some of like the way that they do things like acquisitions and stuff becomes more about acquiring companies that bring a social mission to their portfolio, if you like. And we're not there yet, but I think that's something that we can expect to see over the next 5 years.
Everything that you're describing now, it sounds really similar to the corporate responsibility movement that occurred in the late 90s, early 2000s. And I'm wondering, Paul, whether you think that the Tech for Good movement is something similar to that. You mentioned also the Tech for Good Summit that was created by Facebook. So do you see this as something that is similar to the corporate responsibility movement, or is this something entirely different?
Yeah, let's be honest, that there's really big questions about the business model of deep tech or big tech. And I think there's a bit of self-doubt creeping in some of those really large tech companies about, have they got the right business model for the rest of the 21st century? And do they need to, is actually having a positive social purpose in the world something that they should be looking at? I'm not saying that they're going to switch overnight and all become like these amazingly positive and ethical companies in the world. But there's, in the senior management of those really huge tech companies, there's certainly a little bit of soul searching going on. I mean, I think like Cambridge Analytica or, you know, data breaches and all those sorts of things, that they've triggered it. But actually, you know, there are people in those companies asking, okay, hang on, if we're just like helping to sell more stuff that emits more carbon, that like makes people less happy, what's the point? And you know, I'm not saying it's going to change quickly, but I think that the cracks are starting to show a little bit, and you see that in the way that they're starting to, you know, at least get interested in, okay, well, what is there out there in terms of tech for good, in terms of responsible tech that we can learn from and potentially, you know, might be our future.
So I'm wondering then, Paul, in the time that you have been in this space and, of course, working with BGV, what would you say are the key things that you've learned? If you were building a startup in this space today, what would you say the key things that you've learned that you can share?
For startups, I think it's understand the problem that you're trying to solve in a way that nobody else does. So you, like, really spend time with the people who are affected by whatever it is that you're trying to address. So, you know, if that's in education, then I think you've got to, you know, spend the hours with the people who you're trying to help learn to understand what they're really facing. Like, what is it outside of the classroom that might be affecting what happens inside the classroom, all those sorts of things, really understand the context. Because to be honest, like, I think the design of innovative businesses comes from an insight, and, you know, that insight has to come from deep experience. So I think that's the best starting point I've ever seen for a tech for good startup, is having an insight into a particular problem because you've really understood the people that it affects. And then it's just that, like, that I think one of the biggest indicators of success for us is people who are just willing to experiment with, okay, we know this is a problem, we're really committed to solving it, let's try lots of different things that try to solve it and learn as we go, and do as many experiments as we possibly can along the way to get the data and to learn what's the best possible way of solving this. So yeah, those are the two sides. I think it's like deep understanding of the problem and rapid like experimentation and learning as you're developing the solution.
I think this is really critical. And for me, Paul, it's really heartening to hear everything that you're speaking about, because people do need safe spaces with funds such as yours to be able to create these really important solutions. Because as you mentioned, even though there are lots and lots of different apps and services available, a lot of these ideas are just embryonic. So it's really fantastic that you exist. But this really leads on to my penultimate question, and that, you know, you were talking about the education really as an example of a space where tech for good is having an impact. What are the other sectors that you've seen where tech for good is really having an impact?
Yeah, so we started thinking about it a little bit in line with the UN Sustainable Development Goals, which sounds very lofty. And I met a CEO of a business it was a few months ago now. And I was sort of struck by it. He was like, yeah, it's like the strategy deck for the world. And he was like, that's what the UN Sustainable Development Goals are. They're like the PowerPoint that was held in the sort of board meeting of the world as to what we need to do by the year 2030. And actually, it's a really good strategy. It's like, you know, if we solve these challenges by 2030, then the world will be a lot better place. And I was like, oh yeah, you're right. You know, that's kind of an interesting way of thinking about it. And so there's these 17 goals, which are everything from, you know, basically, you know, massively reducing climate gas emissions, CO2 equivalent emissions, through to preserving life underwater, so the oceans and so on, through to zero poverty, zero hunger. You know, these are all things that we can all sign up to. So we've actually started thinking about it in terms of, okay, well, what are the tech startups we can back that will address those global goals, as they're sometimes called? And, you know, broadly, they fit into sort of stuff to do with health, stuff to do with education and employment, and like stuff to do with the environment, whether that's climate or oceans or whatever it might be, and stuff to do with inequality. And, you know, that ultimately, those are the things that we're looking for at BGV, is things that will really move the needle on one of the UN Sustainable Development Goals and do so at scale, because obviously we've got, you know, billions and billions of people. So, you know, if you're actually going to really contribute to trying to solve some of those global goals or to achieve some of those global goals, then you need to be able to do that for a lot of people.
Paul, that was absolutely fantastic. I'm wondering, where can people find out more about you and your work and connect with you?
So bethnalgreenventures.com, it's an original URL there, but yeah, there's all the information about our offer and you know, what we're looking for in startups is on there. And we're pretty regular in terms of you know, blogging and social media and so on to about what we've learned. We don't really feel like we're probably a bit unusual as a sort of VC firm in that we're pretty open about our performance and about, like, you know, sort of what's going on, because we really do want to, like, let people see what's going on inside in terms of how we work. Because I think, you know, people need to understand where we're coming from if we're to find out whether we're the right partner for them to help as they grow their startup.
Well, Paul, look, thank you so much for spending time with us today. It's been really, really fascinating, and I wish we had more time to speak, but thank you very much again. It's been a pleasure having you on.
No, thanks very much. It's been great.
Thanks very much for listening. Be sure to visit the Digital Mindfulness website to get access to everything we've discussed. If you like this episode, please rate and give us a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. Thanks very much again, and join us next week for another episode.